Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. All right. What haven't we gotten to? Well, that'll be everything. Hello. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Wow, God, we never even got to the Kristen thing. And she beats the MySpace guy and the hey and the whatnot.
Oh, she sent me his profile.
He's a looker, isn't he?
He's a whole lot of creepy.
Yeah, he looks,
It's not so much how he looks as his About Me section.
This is about me a lot of... I like to wear the skin of several young all versions.
And how everything about him is basically listed in alphabetical order, like he's picking out adjectives that sound cool.
What are his adjectives? How does he describe himself? This is our good friend Kristen from accounting. And she said that she'd never... She just went to her inbox or whatever on MySpace, and the guy had just said, "Hello, you don't know me, but I saw your pic," in Foley speak. "I saw your pic on MySpace. You seem hot. I'm going to be at the coast. Would you like to come and have sex with me?" Or whatever, some equivalency to that. Yeah. Right.
Do you want me to read you some of the...
Yes, before we do, let's welcome to the Rick Emerson Show.
We built this Starbucks.
Oh, an oldie.
Yeah. We haven't played in a long time. From OregonLive.com, our good friend Chris Sneathan. Hello,
sir. Not sure what to think of that.
Well, if you don't like this, I got something else. Wait, hold on.
No, it's all good.
I can play this instead.
Thanks for the memory.
Oh, we'll go with option A. We
thank you. It's too late now.
No, it's not too late yet.
I'll just skip right to that.
No, don't do that.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
So much.
All right, Chris Sneathan.
Thank you.
So people, you do like 800 different blogs, don't you?
No, I've got 2.5.
All right. I was to understand that there were many, many, many of them.
That there are many Chris Sneathans?
Yeah,
no.
Well, you know who's a big fan of yours? Byron Beck.
Found that out.
He was busy groping me at Dante's. He was groping me. His hands were on me, but his eyes were on you, Chris. So, all right. So, before we do anything, I'm going to talk to you about this Mark Foley thing. Also, you've got, I saw it in your hot little hand, the new Bob Woodward book.
Yes.
State of Denial, that's like a 3-part series. This sounds like Imus now, but this is a little Bob Woodward. Chris Nathan from OregonLive.com.
The Rick Emerson Book Hour.
Well, here's the thing is, look, everybody knows that I'm a political junkie, but the thing is, as I told Lisa Goddard from CNN, is that some time ago, I sort of dispatched with the idea in my head that politics were ever going to make the world a better place, that things were going to improve. Nothing ever gets better. Nothing ever changes.
Right.
So from my vantage point now, it is strictly it's strictly entertainment. It's not strictly from a sports-like perspective.
Sure.
And as a man who's a sports enthusiast, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
The thing with Bob Woodward, though, is that, man, it's like this is the third book he's written about George Bush and being at war and so forth. And the first two books were like he was down there just licking his boots.
Yes,
The first two books, it was literally, it's like Woodward was down there with the shoeshine kid. Just like, I love you. How you go, boss? And it's sort of, I think he lost a lot of his credibility because those first two books were just him giving a big sloppy wet kiss to George Bush.
Well, I think he's lost credibility now. I think that at the time, looking back on it, I think that he was trying to be on the side of who was going to win. And at the first book, you know, Bush at War, here's a decisive leader, you know, rah, 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 go troops. And I think that a lot of people saw two, three years ago, we were going to be here today.
I suppose.
But
I remember reading that Bush at War, though, and I finished it, and I just felt used. I just felt soiled and dirty, and I'm like, et tu, Bob Woodward.
Right.
Et tu. Let's quickly get Eric here on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir. Eric!
Yeah, oh hey, what's going on?
Hey, Oreo! What's up?
I just wanted to give you some information about chameleons. I hate to disagree with some of the previous callers,
yes.
But I'd be lying. They actually hold a very rare niche in the chameleon, or in the lizard world, in that they can see colors. They have the rods and cones too, and they use their color changing ability more to communicate with the finer sex of the chameleon species, more than blending in.
Yes, to get hot chameleon love.
Yes. There's actually a species called the panther chameleon, which is so brightly colored it couldn't camouflage into anything, as a matter of fact.
I'm just saying, okay, I understand that. I'm simply observing the weirdness of a creature that's able to change its skin color just by thinking about it. You know what I mean? I'm saying, if you had a kid that could do that, you would immediately call either CIA or P.T. Barnum, my friend, and that would be funding. That would pay the rest of your bills, lo the livelong day.
Yeah, they're amazing creatures. I've had quite a few specimens that I've kept as pets in my house.
That's all the ladies. Yeah.
To watch them eat, especially flies, is a really amazing tactic.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I appreciate the chameleon info.
Oh, yeah. I'll aid them.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. There you go. That's would you like to come back to my apartment and watch me feed insects to my chameleon? I got to finish this email from Aaron real quickly, because you're right about this when he talks about the... Here, first of all, am I the only one who's unnerved by the fact that octopi and squids have beaks? I remember learning at a certain point that a squid came with a beak, and you don't really... When you think about a squid, you just think about it being like a soft sort of amorphous pile of goo. You don't really think about it having a beak. The beak seems... It seems wrong. It seems like it's been...
It seems displaced. It doesn't... It seems like it... Yeah.
That's what, like it's been transplanted from some other creature. The beak almost seems like it's wearing it as a funny Halloween sort of joke. Like, hello, I've got a beak, you know? And it's just... It's all kinds of unnerving. And then he said that he actually sent me this at one point. The footage of the octopus... And they did this through time-lapse photography in a laboratory, where there was an octopus that had crawled out of its aquarium... It had walked across, like, you know, sort of walking across the room, had eaten a fish in another aquarium, but it waited until dark to do so. It
and
knew.
And then went back to its tank, right?
It knew, and then it was like, well, my work is done here. And then it's like the scientists come in the next day, and where's the fish? And meanwhile, the octopus is just sitting over in the tank, you know, making itself look like a log or something. It's all very unnerving. We're all going to die. All right. Well, in any event... I'm sorry, we've got new... Oh! All right, here we go. So we've got new political news being handed to us by Tim Riley. So we'll talk about this. We will do a top five. We'll talk about Mark Foley with... Well, let's just talk about that now, actually, with our good friend Chris Sneathan, who's here. So Sarah and I have been... Sarah and I have been reenacting.
Please tell me we're done doing
no,
that.
No.
It gets...
I was only gonna suggest that we needed to add the porn music at this point.
I didn't want to. I thought that would be below the belt.
No.
Bada-bing. Okay.
When we last left, the unnamed underage male page was saying, not me. I'm not a horn dog. Maybe two or three times a week.
Oh, there it is.
Do we have the porn music?
Yes.
All right.
We have the porn music.
Thank you. There you go.
Should I start after that?
Maybe two or three times a week.
That's a good number. In the shower.
Actually, usually I don't do it in the shower. Just because... I shower in the morning, and quickly.
Well, in the bed.
I get up at 5:30, and I'm out of the house by 6:10. Yeah.
You know, I've intentionally not read any of these yet.
Oh, let us read them.
And now I have to have this.
Why read them?
I appreciate this.
Why read them when you can live them?
Oh, great.
And we'll sort of edit as we go along here if it needs. Yeah. All right.
So you okay? You're out of the house by 6:10. Yeah. On your back?
No, face down.
I love detail.
LOL! I see that! LOL!
Really? Do you really do it face down?
I don't even know what they're describing here because we blacked it all out.
I know.
Let's just skip forward.
Yep.
let's skip forward, by the way.
3 days
later. Like, what, 3 pages?
Jesus. Well, let me just read snippets here. Like, for example, when the unnamed underage male page says, I have to be careful. Or, oh, God, why? Any sentence that ends in the phrase, yourself raw, is no good.
Oh.
Oh. You can find something softer.
You can find something softer than a towel, I guess.
Okay.
Oh, but read you the...
Jesus Christ. Oh, wait, this is the
so
best...
The fetish one.
Yeah, the best part here is when, and this is former Congressman Mark Foley, Republican from Florida, says, I am blank as a blank, so tell me when your blank reaches blank.
Gee.
And then the thing is, think of how many fantastic phrases you can make out of that.
Octopus.
And then thank you. And then the boy says,
I have a cast fetish.
Well, tell me. Cast.
Yeah, you know, like a plaster cast.
Okay, so what happens? How does it turn you on?
I don't know. It just does. I've never had one, but people that have them turn me on.
Who's turned on? What kind of a sheltered life do you lead where you're turned on by a cast?
people that have them turn me on, and if I had one, it would probably turn me on. Beats me.
And if I have one, it would probably turn me on?
If I had a broken bone, it would be the hottest thing ever. Will you break my bones?
Jesus Christ.
But I like that. It's kind of weird. But along with that, I like the whole Catholic schoolgirl look.
I like girls. I like girls.
I'm not gay.
All right, let's never read this again.
Can I throw this away now?
Oh, God, yeah.
I'm tired and sore.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen.
There's really nowhere to go after that, is there?
Wow.
Well, and I mean, and the thing is, they knew about it. They knew about it for like a year and a half.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm unsure about when this particular conversation took place. But Dennis Hastert this morning was saying that, well, we had some idea vaguely a year and a half ago that he was talking to underage boys. And it's like, how many bites at that apple do you get? You know what I mean?
Yep.
Well, I mean, how many... what is the acceptable number of inappropriate conversations?
Well, evidently we've discovered it.
I mean,
perhaps, but the thing is, you know, it's like we were talking about during the break. This isn't the only thing that's going on back there.
What do you mean?
The Mark Foley. There are other Mark Foleys back there.
I thought you meant something else.
No. Well, I mean, there's that too.
Do you have a cat?
Yeah, exactly. No, but we all think that our particular representative or senator is some lily white thing, and it's just not so. And I'm not saying that there aren't great people back there, and I'm not saying that they're all lily white and that they're all not. But
you're trying so hard to be even handed. You're trying so hard to be fair. Just say it.
Well, no, there's a story that came into my head, and I'm like, I don't really want to talk about that particular person.
I mean,
from my own personal experience. I grew up in Oregon's 5th District, like I talked about. Denny Smith used to be our representative back in the day. He finally got bounced. I don't know if he retired or if he got bounced by Mike Kopetsky, but Mike Kopetsky went back there and just drank for two straight terms.
What are you going to do? No, I'm going to be in the back drinking. Oh, you just call
well,
me if
you know, he got
sort of
stopped a... until he finally got stopped driving the wrong way on a one-way street at 2 o'clock
him.
In the morning, a la Kennedy.
Or Kennedy.
And, you know, so then they replace him with one of the Bunn brothers, who wasn't much better. And now we've got, you know, Darlene Hooley back there, who, by all accounts, is a competent representative, and I'm...
See, the problem is you're such a journalist about this. You're really trying to be nice. You're trying to be fair. Oh. I remember I was just at the right age to be around when that Bob Packwood scandal happened.
Right.
Man, and you want to talk about...
I actually went to school with his daughter in Southern Oregon.
Oh, that had to be a lot of fun.
And I was working at the college radio station there. She gave me the story 2 days before it broke.
Really?
And I went to my news director, and I was like, well, here's what's up. And she, you know, and she looks at me and she's like, well, you know, gosh, you know, I should probably do something about that, but...
But what are you going to do?
Well, no, because if the story breaks out of Ashland, Oregon, well, now who's giving the story up?
I see. No, that's a fair
point. You know, and here's a 19-year-old girl who doesn't necessarily... She wasn't a big fan of her father.
I can't even imagine. I mean, first of all, your dad's a politician. It's got to be borderline embarrassing.
Right.
Anyway. I mean, I don't care who he is. But, I mean, it's got to be the worst thing on earth. I remember that Bob Packwood thing. And I can't remember the exact chronology of it. Sarah's probably a little too young even to remember Bob Packwood. But it was a whole lot of, groping women in elevators.
But that was another thing that everybody knew back there.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden, the story breaks out of the Washington Post, I believe, broke the story. The Oregonian had it, just like they had the Goldschmidt story forever.
And then they just sat
and
on
they
it?
Knew. And then all of a sudden, all these pictures start showing up of, well, here's Bob leering at some woman that we've had for 15 years, and we haven't, you know, and we haven't told anybody.
And if you know Bob Packwood, he's just the most unpleasant. Like, he looks like a toad. I mean, he really does. I remember there was some story about him. And again, let me just be very clear about this. I don't care what consenting adults do. I don't care. Flirting, teasing, sex, groping, stooping, whatever. It doesn't matter to me. It's all about, like, because it's all it's just a moralizing nitwit, right? And I remember some story about, maybe I'm remembering this wrong, but there was some story about Bob Packwood shoving a woman up against an elevator door and attempting to forcibly, quote, tongue kiss her.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, and if you've seen, I mean, he just looked like death warmed over. Right. I mean, he looked like that guy from Poltergeist 2, that let me in guy. It's the idea of that guy attempting to worm his tongue in between your clenched teeth. It's just the most, that's an image that's going to stay with all
Absolutely.
Of us forever. But I mean, if you're the Oregonian, you know that. Why don't you, what possible reason would the Oregonian have to
know.
Not tell anybody
you
about
know,
that?
They're, who knows? Who knows the reasoning behind what it is that they do?
All right. Well, let's take a break here. We'll come back. We'll come back around the corner. We'll do the top five. And I have obviously fabricated news from The Independent, which is a fine British paper. Read that when we get back. It's 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson Show, live from Portland. Don't go anywhere. We are back after this on AM 970. Solid State Radio. See, here's the thing. Here's how it works, though. So it begins. All of the Jackson jokes are arriving in my inbox, cleverly redesigned as Matt Foley, as Mark. Hey, there you go. Attention, Hack DJ. There's a bit for you. Instead of Matt Foley, it becomes Mark Foley. Blah, 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 blah. Just go with it. Sort of half form, but I know you can do something with it. All right. Spot. Whose breasts are those on your screen?
I think it's Cindy Crawford.
Really? Those are bigger than the last time I saw her. Hmm. 503-733.
Okay.
I'm tired and sore.
In just a moment, we'll welcome Peter Carlin to the Rick Emerson Show for the Oregonian. And ladies and gentlemen, let us now go to the Ministry of Truth with Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
That Bill fan who shot three kids to death in an Amish school was not Amish. Just a plain old milkman. Then we have one dead, one arrested after a CB radio argument in the Vancouver Mall. Apparently these CBers were arguing. Apparently there's an argument between Ken and Brander on the CB, and it escalated into a shooting. And they,
I don't understand.
Well, these
there's
two CBers
things.
Were arguing.
Okay, but were they...
on the CB radio.
But then they... Where did the shooting happen?
It happened at the mall in Vancouver.
So were they talking on the CB?
Got no argument.
But it was a whole lot of like... We're going to settle this at the food court. Come on back. All right. I mean, seriously, were they fighting on the CB and then they arranged to settle things right in front of the Cajun Grill?
No, well, this was outside the mall. It was at 1:30 in the morning.
But it was on their CBs?
They started arguing on their CBs.
Who still uses a CB radio?
Apparently people in Vancouver.
Well, there you go.
We're talking about Vancouver here.
I guess they sell that with the tinfoil hat. All right. Well, whatever. It's can I just tell you, here's something you didn't know about me. I know an astonishing amount. Maybe not an astonishing amount, but I know a large amount of CB lingo. It's one of those holdovers from growing up in a hick town.
Why, that's fascinating. Let's hear more.
Thanks, Tim. Thank you.
Well, anyway, a Playboy is resurrecting its nightclub in Las Vegas. The new club will be on the top three floors of the Palms Hotel Casino. And the company's looking to open brand new Playboy clubs with other destinations.
I said years ago they had it. I think they've missed their window on it. I think they should have done it like at 97, 98, like in the post-swingers era.
Well, the magazine circulation, now 3 million. It was 7.2 million back in 1972.
You know, that's the thing. That is the risk that comes with changing the world. Is if you change the world so much around you that you no longer stand out, you sort of become obviated. Let's do one more, and then we'll welcome Peter Carlin to the show.
Well, Condoleezza Rice says she cannot recall when... CIA Chief George Tenet warned her of the impending Al-Qaeda attack in the United States.
Oh, this sounds
familiar.
This says,
still another new book comes out. I am quite certain I could remember what I was told, but I don't remember a thing, says Condoleezza Rice.
Okay. Do we have sound on that?
No, we don't.
All right, okay.
Some other time. That's all you get.
Fantastic. What was your quote again?
She doesn't really remember.
All right. It's just a whole lot of...
When I am quite certain of this, I would remember if I was told... Oh, my. This sentence is like four paragraphs long.
This is a syntactical Cambodia.
I'm not even going to attempt this.
There you go. That's the spirit of the newsroom here at AM 970.
Yes.
This is difficult. I'm not going to try. Well, this is, I mean, all of this is like shades of, what's that thing that Reagan said? Mistakes were made. That's the famous Reagan quote.
Mistakes were made.
All right, well, there you go. Well, it's only a war. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Tim Riley, greatest newsman on earth.
Oh, thank you.
No, thank you, sir.
Oh, thank you.
No, thank you. No. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, let us now welcome to the, I've lost my sounder. Ladies and gentlemen, let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show.
Thank you so much.
You can touch it.
Peter Carlin, TV critic for the Oregonian. Hello, sir. How are you?
Oh, you're going to have to flip those. You're going to have me say that first and then have her say thank you very much.
Well, okay.
Huh?
And so shall you receive.
You can touch it.
Oh, but they're too far apart on the machine. You know, the best part is that this one... I...
So much.
It seems like it gets longer every time we play it.
Seriously, can you do some digital, like, shortening?
No, but I can digitally elongate it. Listen to this. Seriously, this goes on for a minute and a half.
You could touch it.
All right, there you go. Peter Carlin, how are you, sir?
I was better until a minute ago.
You know, I try to make every visit to the Rick Emerson Show lively and memorable.
Yeah, well, job done, my friend.
All right. Well, hey, just so you know, doing my weekly job to pimp your book, Catch a Wave, The Rise, Fall, and Redemption of the Beach Boys, Brian Wilson, which, by the way, you are probably aware of this. Let me ask you this. When you have a book that's out or whatever, do your people or your peeps or your whoever it is, do they... I mean, do you just get continual updates on every time the book is reviewed anywhere?
Well, I think in a better world, yes.
So not you, but other people might.
Yeah.
Jacqueline Suzanne might have, but
oh,
not you.
Oh, yeah, she's got it all worked out.
Because I know that you are reviewed quite favorably in the new issue of Rolling Stone magazine.
Yeah.
And see, but that, come on, that's you as a lifelong rock and roll fan, that's got to be a special kind of cool when Rolling Stone mentions you and gives you a thumbs up.
Sure. It would have been cooler if they'd done it in 1974 when it was a really good magazine.
They'd done it before they were putting Justin Timberlake on the cover.
Yeah.
You know, the thing about Rolling Stone is, I mean, I think Henry Rollins actually summed it up when he was talking about how there's so much to read and there's such information overload in 2006 that when Rolling Stone does something like putting NSYNC on the cover, it's sort of nice in a way because it simplifies your life because you can look at it and go, well, that's a magazine I don't ever need to read again. And you can just sort of move on.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Well, you know, and also just the pages upon pages of style information.
Oh, God, don't even get me started. Style information, and for the love of sweet almighty, can we quit putting pieces of paper doused in petrochemical stink in there?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't need to know what some new, incredibly expensive, more, you know, pricier than gold Calvin Klein perfume smells like. I just don't. That, and if you notice it, I don't know at what point they must do this. I mean, Jan Wenner must do this because there's some demographic study told him it was wise to do so. But at what point did Rolling Stone just become a fashion magazine with endless pages in the middle of guys wearing shirts that cost $185 that I will never buy and couldn't afford even if I wanted to?
Sure.
I mean,
yeah.
the whole thing just annoys me. You know, the last good American music magazine is Blender. That's it. That's it, man. There's nothing left. You got to go to the only good music magazines other than Blender are British.
What about the one called?
No, not even that. Well, I don't know. I mean, if you tell me, I'm always looking for music stuff to read.
Okay.
But I mean, I got
it bookmarked here.
I got nothing.
I had it bookmarked, and now I don't know where it is.
Is it because they reviewed your book?
No, they haven't. Which is why they're so good. They have standards.
All right.
Well, this isn't going anywhere.
It's good to see you.
If I find it, I'll blurt it out.
Oregonian has the information at their fingertips.
You'd think. No, you know what? I have a bookmarked at home. I don't have a bookmarked here.
All right. I got to say, though, but to get back on the road here. So I'm about to, about a third of the way through your book, through Catch a Wave.
That's it?
Look, I got a life. I got things I'm doing. I don't have much of a life, but I do have some things I was doing. No, I am plowing my way through it with expediency. So,
that's cool. Thanks.
It's very good. I'm just entering the where Brian has just kind of gone into his own little private funhouse. It is right as he is shelving a smile.
Yeah.
So, anyway, boy, can I just tell you this though, real quickly?
Okay.
I know that this will sound like heresy to anybody who follows the saga, the Beach Boys, and so forth. But I mean, there really are times, and this all comes back to me when I read your book. Is there really are times when one can very, very, you can very much sympathize with Mike Love at some points, can't you? I mean, that he's sitting there and he's just trying to be a guy in a rock and roll band, and Brian Wilson is sitting inside a sandbox with a fireman's hat on, you know, making everybody sing, you know, like a Starkist tuna jingle over and over again.
Well, but you know what, though? No.
Well, okay. No, it's fine. It doesn't matter. I'm just saying from my vantage point.
Yeah. Here's the thing. That kind of art, that kind of creativity requires a certain amount of rule-breaking and craziness. And while it's true that the Wilson boys, particularly Brian, tended to go over the top, and that there was quite a bit of just unhealthy weirdness taking place, Mike's just rigid, angry enforcement of normalcy, I think, just, you know, I think it just set them back. And another thing that can't be taken lightly, and this comes out a little later in the narrative, is that he's an angry, often at times hostile, prone to blurting out, you know, prone to attacking people type of person, and I think that has, I think it compromised their career over the years. I mean, not just screaming at people from on stage, but I mean, you know, actively, I think, alienating other musicians just because he's such, you know, kind of an arrogant type of guy.
I think, I was talking to Joni DeRoshi about this, actually, I forget what prompted this discussion, but we were talking about, it does seem like in all of, not in all, but in a huge number of really iconic, successful bands, though, there is always this push and pull. There's always a guy who is a rigid control freak, and then there's always a guy that is just sort of a talented, sometimes incredibly talented, but just completely chaotic Rain Man F-up. Do you know what I mean? And so it's like, that's why, you know, you've got in Kiss, you get the guy like Ace Frehley, you know, who's a great guitar player, very melodic, added a lot to the band, but then gets drunk and drives his DeLorean 100 miles an hour the wrong way in traffic. You know, and then you got Gene Simmons, on the other hand, who just sits at home basically waiting for checks to arrive in the mail now. You know, same thing in, you know, the Rolling Stones, where you got Mick, who's by all accounts very financially and economically driven, and you've got Keith, who, you know, it takes, you know, whatever, 40 years to finish the guitar parts to Exile on Main Street because he keeps nodding off halfway through a solo.
Yeah, but I think the distinction there is that Mick, you know, what he added to that band, I think, is just, I mean, you know, I don't know. Mike is in many ways a very toxic type of person, and even the people who feel sympathetic toward him, I think, you know, they say things like, you know, they talk about how, what a hard worker he is and how competent he is and, you know, and how driven he is. And on the other hand, they also acknowledge that he has no friends because, you know, nobody likes him because he's a jerk. But hopefully what comes out in the book is that the reason, you know, that you can kind of trace the reasons why that might be by, you know, looking into his childhood and seeing, you know, a guy that was really...
Well, he's a very success-at-any-cost kind of guy, yeah.
Because I think he's got some problems with his identity and with his sense of self. And, you know, and I think he just decided to go, you know, to take that on the road, you know, and, you know, externalize it.
By the way, I would tell everybody in the audience now that until I finish the book, and then probably 1 week after that, this will happen every week where Peter Carlin and I will just sit and talk about the Beach Boys for 8 minutes. real quickly, though, I do want to ask you about Friday Night Lights.
Okay.
Does that start tonight?
Tomorrow,
because I got to tell you, man, and I don't know if you've read the book or not.
Yes, I did.
Man, I kind of did it in a roundabout way. I saw the movie first, and as much as I'm not much of a sports fan, I'm a sucker for sports films, even the ones that are badly done, even like Varsity Blues, which is really, in many ways, the worst film ever made. It really is just so terrible. And the weird thing is that Varsity Blues and Friday Night Lights are very much, they're very much polar twins. Clearly, they're both based on the Permian Panthers in Odessa, Texas. But Varsity Blues, of course, is just this very after-school special MTV kind of sex, drugs, rock and roll version, whereas Friday Night Lights is just brilliant and bleak and dark and horrifying and inspiring and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read the book by Buzz Bissinger, and I tell everybody this, that two things. A, if you have not read Friday Night Lights by Buzz Bissinger, even if you actively dislike sports, even if you despise sports,
yeah,
you got to read it because it is one of the best books period that I've ever read. And in a way, I say that, but it's like I almost regret reading Friday Night Lights in some ways because it was such a... That book just... I mean, it's scorching. I mean, I really do feel like I just... And I mean this as a compliment, I suppose, but I just feel like I got this sort of... I don't know, it just sort of it tainted my soul forever because it was just so relentlessly bleak and horrifying almost. The image of this town where there's no hope, no jobs, no money, no life, no future, no anything.
Right.
And so everything, it becomes this whole inverted pyramid where it all rests on these poor high school kids.
Yeah.
So anyway, but I mean, so I don't even know how the show could possibly live up to all of this, but I mean, but you are raving about it. You said it's great.
Yeah, you know, I read that book a long time ago, so I'm not remembering the bleakness that you described. But the movie, I mean, the TV show, and I didn't see the movie either.
And the movie's very good.
But the show is just, you know, in a sense, it's less bleak. I mean, it's kind of a dusty small town in West Texas, and you get the sense that there's just not a lot going on there. But, you know, people don't seem... There's nothing particularly horrific about it. But the interesting thing to me is just that it gets to the heart of what drives people into athletics and why people care about athletics and, you know, and what those relationships are like. So it's like every great story, in a sense, it doesn't really matter what the milieu is. What matters is the way, the ability, the depth of the, you know, the writer's understanding of people's motivations and their feelings, and you know, and that's what the show is really about. I mean, it's artfully shot. It's just, you know, wonderfully acted by a lot of really young. I mean, I don't know if there's high school age kids for the most part, and but it's just a really elegantly written and put together TV show. And I despise football, and that kind of jock mentality thing does very, very little for me. It was not a show I was looking forward to watching, and I was just completely sucked into it.
Well, Sarah and I were talking about...
Really.
Sarah and I earlier were talking about, and not to rekindle unpleasant, but Sarah and I were talking about the movie Hustle and Flow, the Terrence Howard film, and which I had finally seen after a long time, which I really liked, and she didn't, and she sort of disliked it for some of the same reasons that I liked it, which is that it's very... it was a really unflinching portrait of a pretty bad guy, and a guy who it would have been really easy to do what they did with Eminem and 8 Mile, which is just give him a halo and make him this working class hero.
Right.
But they had the guts to kind of show him as a pimp and being a not very good person.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's again, I'm a huge fan. A sort of setup that I never get tired of is the tiny little miserable bombed out bleak town where there's. Where the character sees one avenue to success. You know, they see one way out.
Right.
And that's a thing that never... And I'm also, I think maybe because I came from a town that had... Not like I grew up in the worst place on earth, but a town that because of the nuclear industry was either boom or bust, and a lot of times there was just a feeling of kind of hopelessness that hung over the whole place that I came from. And as you said, just this, you know, this idea where everything just gets focused... This superheated focus on this one aspect of life. Is the TV show set in Odessa?
No, it's set in a fictional town called Dillon.
Really? That's very interesting, actually, that they did. Because, you know, the thing about Buzz Bissinger is he lived in that town. He lived in Odessa for, I think, either a year or 2 years. And
yeah.
He kind of told them, he's like, I'm writing a book. And they kind of went, okay. And then they forgot.
Right.
And, like, the book came out. And he is still persona non grata in that town. They've had to cancel book signings. He said he was supposed to, when the book came out, it was like a number one bestseller and it was a phenomenon. And he had a book signing scheduled there, and they had so many death threats that they had to cancel it.
Yeah.
Because the town just despised the way that they got depicted. So, anyway.
Sorry about that, guys.
Well, I'm all over it. And Studio 60, which is on tonight, continues to be a genius, continues to be brilliant. Have you seen tonight's?
Is this number two or
this
number
is number three tonight?
I haven't seen it. No, I'll look forward to it.
Though. All right. So I gotta tell you, they surprised me last week. I thought they were going to end with the Crazy Christian sketch, and they kind of went a whole different way.
Oh, I didn't tell you, but I was trying to tell you that you were wrong.
But I, you know, thank you.
But you would have none of it. You didn't want me to tell you.
I never tire.
You just wanted to live with your...
Rick
with your...
doesn't hear anyone but Rick.
I never tire. Rick Emerson never tires of being told that he's wrong.
Well, that's a bunch of hooey right there.
I had this whole thing that I was going to talk about myself in the third person all day, and then Adam Carolla beat me to it by a day. So I'm going to try to slip in every now and again, though.
Yeah.
All right. What else is coming up that we got to watch, if anything?
That's new or something?
Yeah, you know, or just, you know. No, I mean, anytime I ask you that and you kind of go, well.
You know, there's all this cool stuff on now. It's sort of painful. I mean, you got your Lost is coming up on Wednesday, the first new Lost of the year. That's going to be huge.
And what do you know, if anything, about this show Dexter on Showtime?
Oh, you know, I saw a cut down of it. I didn't steal myself to watch the pilot yet. But it's Michael C. Hall, ex of 6 Feet Under.
Right. And
he plays like a CSI.
Oh, is that? He's David.
Yeah.
From 6 Feet Under. I had no idea where I knew him from.
Right.
He looked so familiar, but I couldn't put my finger. We got this big pimping email from Inside CBS commanding us to watch it.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, telling us that it was blah, 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 edgy, blah, 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 in your face, blah, 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 an exciting new direction for TV.
Yeah, right. Murder. Who'd have thought?
Yeah, seriously. Well, and you just know that it was originally some different, because it's a serial killer who kills other criminals. And you just know that that's something that they got shoved on them by the network as a way to make it palatable to an American audience. You just know that.
No, actually, I think the book originally sort of used that, was about that.
See, there again, Rick Emerson, wrong about something.
Rick is wrong.
Peter Carlin, pointing it out. All right. Peter Carlin, read him in print in the Oregonian, online at OregonLive.com. Peter Carlin.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, my friend.
Hey, my pleasure.
There you go. Peter Carlin, ladies and gentlemen, read him in print in the Oregonian, online at OregonLive.com. We come back. We'll lament the fact that we never got to the top five. We'll talk a little bit more to Chris Sneathan from OregonLive.com. Mailman Chris will be with us to tell us what we did. This whole show over already? Damn,
yeah.
Man. I think we fell into a wormhole or something at like 10:58. Lycus coming up at 3, Donna Mike at 7, etc., etc. Don't go anywhere. Back after this, the Rick Emerson Show. Phrase, by the way, was don't let your pee marinate in there.
It's very frustrating. I'm not going to pee on someone's pee. Like, if it's broken,
stop.
Fix it.
You know, okay.
You wouldn't last very long in a men's room.
Seriously.
No.
You don't even know. See, this is a unisex bathroom here, so you get kind of the best of both worlds and the worst of both worlds. You don't even know what a men's room is like most of the time.
No, I know what a men's room is like because that's what I use every day. I can put the toilet seat down every single day.
That is true. You are the only woman in here most of the day. Because Kristen's out of here by like, yeah, she's out of here at 10. So it's pretty much just you.
Yeah.
And you live with two guys anyway. Do you have
two
bathroom?
Really clean guys. I only share it with one of them, and it's a big bathroom. It's a really nice bathroom.
All right. It's 503.
It's bigger than my room.
7332970. Well, we never got to the top five. What can you do? Chris Sneathan, OregonLive.com. Now, real quickly here. So I can say that, right? OregonLive.com. They're not going to brand you or something for having me.
No.
It's too late. I've said it hundreds of times.
Exactly.
You used a phrase, and I won't mention the name, because we had talked at one point about we had talked about a website that somebody else made up. A guy we know.
Yes.
Who's not you, who'd made this website called Dave Navarro's a Gigantic Douche.com.
Yes.
And this guy we know had said that we couldn't name his employer or who he typically wrote for because they got upset when people, quote, went off the reservation.
Yes.
And then this person mentioned somebody who writes for the Oregonian who got in some trouble for going, quote, off the reservation.
I believe that person I believe somebody was covering a television convention earlier this year who also got in a little bit of trouble for some stuff that he was writing on the blog.
Really? Is that true?
No.
I'm just going to sit here silent until you tell me.
Evidently, yes. No. Okay, so I don't know what happened. I don't know, you know, all the ins and outs of what happened. Basically, the way I found out was there's another website out there, Oregon Media Insider.
Yeah.
That I frequent, and one day she mentioned something about Oregon Live bloggers being grumpy, and I was like, I jumped on there because I wanted to defend my good name.
Your peeps.
Said, you know, I'm a lover. And
okay.
And then she...
Kristen even gives, baby.
Exactly. But then she said she wasn't talking about me. She was talking about Ken Zano and also Mr. Carlin.
Peter's grumpiness is his most endearing trait, though. That really is why we love him.
Yeah.
It's what makes him special to us.
So, like I said, I didn't read his...
We got to break you of this professionalism. You're like Bob Costantini from CNN. The thing is, I can sense with every syllable you utter how much... That there's like five syllables still behind that that you won't tell us.
At least.
See... Dude,
I'm talking about having to use the bathroom on there. You don't need to be shy here.
Seriously.
What do you want me to say?
No, it's too late now. We've only got a minute.
We've got a couple of minutes.
Yeah, I got to bring on Chris, and we got to figure out who's going to track the show tomorrow because Chris is going to be gone. Let me welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show.
A postman is the person in your neighborhood.
Our good friend, mailman Chris, Sarah's bouncing uncontrollably
in
her...
I'm fine.
Now, why didn't you just use the bathroom in the hallway?
Because we only had a 3-minute break, and I was afraid I wouldn't make it.
Oh, that's... See, but it takes longer for y'all than for them. I've got it down to a fine art. You know what it is? It's decades, not decades, but many, many years of playing oldies records that are only like 2 minutes long. No automation then either. You had to get in the bathroom and get your business done before Sugar Sugar was done playing.
Hey, at least they're... restroom in your office, and you know.
Yeah, if you're a mailman, where do you go to the bathroom?
You don't.
you just let it absorb back into your cells.
Maybe they're like
if you got to go that bad, you have to just like deviate up to a gas station or something.
Do you ever use the bathroom of a person to whom you're delivering mail?
No.
Why not?
Is that illegal?
Is that against the law?
No, but I would never want to go. I just wouldn't want to go in someone's house.
You don't want to start that kind of relationship?
The first time I step in someone's house, a $100 bill is going to turn up missing, and, you know, who's going to get blamed?
Oh, I see. So that, you know, it's like a liability issue.
I would think so. I don't think it's a rule, but, man, I just...
Do you keep a mental list in your head? Because I do this in certain parts of Portland. A mental list in your... Because I have, as Sarah will tell you, I have a very active bladder. And maybe you don't want to know that, but now you do. So what can you do? It is from years in radio where you train yourself. You know, look, you have to execute this task in 38 seconds. And so, but as a result, like in radio, you never know when you're going to get the next chance to use the bathroom. So you do it every chance you get. And so as a result, though, even when you're not on the air, your body's still, man, it's like three times
an
hour.
It's like a nervous tic for you now, too. You do it. Every break.
Literally, it's like every break. But you can't turn that off, so to speak. And so as I sort of Sarah just did that. That was really funny face. As I walk through Portland, I keep a mental Thomas guide in my head of where all the publicly accessible bathrooms are.
Well, I know on my route where there are accessible restrooms, and
Fantastic.
There aren't very many.
Let's quickly bring on Mary, the daughter of a mailman. She has asked if she can track the show's progress tomorrow. Mary?
Hi, Mimi.
Hello? Hi.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Doing well, thanks. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, I can. Chris, do you have any questions for Mary? She's offered to track the show's progress Tuesday while you're gone.
You just got to be able to listen to the whole show. That's the thing.
All right. Hey, Chris, what station do you work out of?
Park Rose.
Okay.
Park Rose. All the way over there, huh? Okay.
This is gripping. All right.
Gripping, yeah.
Okay, Mary, just going to put you back on hold there. All right, Chris, we didn't get to anything today, did we?
You got to Peter Carlin, Chris Steven, The Gossip, The Geek Watch, The Hick Watch, and you talked about Kristen's... story.
Oh, God damn it. We didn't really do that, though. We
brought it up.
Jesus, God. Well, we got to talk about it tomorrow, though, because I got lots to say about that.
But you did not even attempt the corpse watch.
Now you're actually not only just telling me what I can get to, you're actually now docking us points for my mental attitude. All right. All right, so where are we at?
That would put you at 59.
Jesus Christ. All right, thank you, sir. Enjoy your days off. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, and I'll be listening, so, you know, it's worst case scenario, You just do what you have to do, and when I get back, I'll tell you whether the push-up tally is right or not.
Fantastic. Chris Sneathan, where can we read your work, sir?
ChrisSneathan.blogs.oregonlive.com, or if you just go into Google and Google Couve Operator.
Couve Operator, the name of your blog. Rick Emerson, show produced today and every day by the lovely Sarah Dillon for AM970 Solid State Radio, the newsroom, Tim Riley. Thanks to Chris Sneathan, Lisa Goddard, and Scotty J. Moore, the intern manager of the Rick Emerson office. East is Dave Zinn. Like us next, Donna Mike at 7. As always, don't let the bastard grenade. And thank you for listening. See y'all tomorrow. Be safe. Bye. She's like a three-legged pony.